A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is Cues of the Force. The Q stands for questions, but I'm going to bring up another Q thing, and that is Quiznos subs. There's been another round of people remembering the bonkers ads from Quiznos subs. Ads so weird that they helped tank the company. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Absock, and I do not like my subs toasted, so Quiznos was a challenge for me. But it was fun to watch them just kind of slide them through the toaster oven.
Who wants wet Subway? Come to Quiznos.
You know, if that had just been the commercial, it would have worked. Great cue. Great. Yeah.
But instead, they got a pepper bar. They have a pepper bar, and we have questions. Your questions that we're very excited to get to. We first want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And we've been doing this for so long, there's got to be a lot more than 180,000. We are recommending a new book. It is Path to Deceit, a part of the High Republic Adventures. This book is by Tessa Grattan and Justina Ireland. We have it in our homes, and we look forward to reading it. If you want to be all caught up for when we get around to discussing that book, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4center. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/4center for a free audiobook. We are going to have some A's that are answers, but we also have our segment, Ask. Ken, do you want to handle our ask?
I do. Welcome to the ask. All right. Four Center asks for help. Hi, friends. Hey, we are having so much fun building out our YouTube channel. We had a great live stream last Friday, a holiday edition. A lot of fun. We hung out for over 2 hours and some great questions coming in. It was a lot of fun. So we're going to be doing that again in January, but we're going to be doing a lot more on YouTube. We announced on that show our new YouTube only show coming in February called Figure Fights. Going to be a lot of fun. You can check that video for more announcements, but we'll get that information out there. And so all this leads to the ask. We're building out this channel. We'd love for you to consider subscribing to our YouTube channel. We're trying to get to 7,000 subscribers. The number is growing, and we really appreciate the community stepping up as we try to branch out over there. It's, you know, it's 2022 into 2023. It's never late to branch out more into YouTube, but we just found ourselves it's the right time, and we're in the right position to do so, which we maybe haven't been in the last few years. So thank you for joining us on the journey. And if you want to help us reach that goal of 7,000 subscribers, head over to YouTube and find us at Force Center.
That is right. Well done. You should be a professional pitch person.
Hey, you know, Newcastle, Pennsylvania gets to hear me every Saturday morning selling mattresses.
That is great. So get a mattress, subscribe to us on YouTube, and settle in as we enjoy answering these questions of the forest. We have two from Twitter, two from our patrons on Patreon. We go first to Twitter and Michael Gibbons. Michael asks, if there was ever an Imperial Civil War, Vader versus Palpatine, who do you think all the various factions would side with? At first, I was wondering about the Inquisitors and couldn't make up my mind, but then wondered about Thrawn, Tarkin, the Navy, the ISB, and got even more confused. This is really, really great to think who would side with Vader versus Palpatine and why. It's a chance to dive into the psychology of different Imperial factions. Ken, where does your mind go?
I think it is confusing. Now, first of all, the Imperial Civil War is a great like mid-90s expanded universe concept that never, you know, came to be. we have a lot of great, the War of the Bounty Hunters now. There's the Crimson Dawn stuff going on in the comics. This kind of falls in line with that. But yeah, no, I'm confusing too. Confusing for me as well, because I'll start with this. The Empire is full of people who chase power or perceive power. So it would be all about the messaging from either of these parties. Who's got the line to winning? And, you know, Palpatine kind of has the advantage in that, because one of the key factors is no one really knew what to make of that old space wizard that was Darth Vader, right? Like, you're on Tarkin's, Tarkin's holding your leash. You're Palpatine's lapdog. A lot of dog references to Vader, I guess. So it was tough. And then so, I'm showing my math here, Joseph. Vader was also a bad supervisor and was a bit of a toxic boss.
He didn't have a good benefits package at all. I might choke you is not a good benefits package.
Now, I'm not saying Palpatine didn't do worse, but it's not his broadcast, right? He's on the posters with a smile on his face. Vader's playing bad cop, and you've got the Inquisitorious side with him, like, I don't know if they love him. The Ozzel might side with Vader, but that, I don't know. So I think the Inquisitors would be splintered, depending on who, maybe, you know, if someone like Reva's there, who's like, I'll side with Vader to kill him. So that's that. I'll start there. Then I have some actual draft picks to go into, but it is confusing because the Empire, again, is just all about clout and power. And there's nothing that's solid about that to me.
Yeah, no, our mind went to the same psychology of that's how to break it down. There's the cruel, cutthroat nature of the Empire undermines any genuine loyalty, right? It's just do whatever you can to get power, right? So every faction would just be figuring out how to come out on top. So I think there'd be a lot of flip-floppers, right? There'd be people who'd be intimidated by Vader in front of him to claiming that they're on Vader's side, but then they would probably mutiny over to Palpatine, try to take Vader out silently to please the bigger boss.
Yeah.
And I think I got some draft picks as well that could maybe shift a little bit here and there, but I think ultimately almost everyone sides with Palpatine because of what you're talking about. Because not only does he have more power, he's the legitimate authority figure. But for a lot of people, he hasn't played his hand. They just think like, okay, yeah, no. I mean, he's kind of messed up if you've seen him in person. Sometimes yeah. He's got the hologram and make himself look younger. Okay, whatever. But not everybody really knows who or what he really is, right? He's the legitimate authority figure. And right now he is the boss, right?
Right.
And for people who are power hungry, it's a big bet to bet on the second in command when you could just sidle up to the existing power who's been holding it for a long time. And in contrast to, okay, kind of creepy, kind of weird looking, but the legitimate authority figure that has reigned for years. Mm-hmm. In contrast, the scary, unknowable monster who gets to break the rules right and left when we don't? Bleep that guy.
bleep that guy better. Yeah, so unless, to me, and I don't want to cut off your thought there, but unless to me, like, Vader's going around actively recruiting people because he thinks he can win. That might be, you know, the Sith way, number one. But two, like, that's the only way to me I think he could really convince people. Because otherwise, I think you're right. Palpatine is the power.
And everybody that Vader approaches, right, they have an immediate choice of, do I place my chips on Vader and I can help him overturn the Empire or the Emperor, and then I'll get more power being at Vader's side? Or can I just immediately cash in the power potential by running to Palpatine and telling him?
Right?
Like, that's the first choice, right? And I just think a lot of them, the Empire doesn't want you to think creatively. It doesn't want you to think that structures can change. It wants you to reinforce what exists. So almost everybody in the Empire has been kind of brutally trained to reinforce what exists. So why would you take a risk to get more power by helping Vader make a change when you could reinforce the existing power structure and possibly be rewarded in a much safer way by Palpatine going, thanks for the heads up?
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Also, it sounds like you're talking about, like, Hollywood historically, about why there's not a lot of creative projects greenlit, because that's a chance for you to lose your power. If you take a chance as a producer, your name's on that and it fails. Vader is a Hollywood producer.
Vader is, yeah, he's got a hot new script that if it succeeds, you will be lauded for years. But if it stumbles, all of the blame will come tumbling down on you for your hot new avant-garde film project.
Yeah, so he's the producer, Palpatine's the studio, and he's just trying to convince everyone to invest.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, Vader's the guy you maybe pitch to and like, well, Vader loves it, but he's got to take it up to Palpatine, and that's probably going to be a no.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
So what are your draft picks then?
Yeah, so going with some of the names you mentioned there, just going right to that, I said Thrawn sides with Vader, and this just seems like the modern Thrawn books, the canon Thrawn books, which I know you and I haven't taken as deep a dive into as others, but, you know, Thrawn spends time with Anakin, spends time with Vader, and I always got the sense that he connected some of the dots at least. So I just think Thrawn has that wild card energy. Yes, he's working with Palpatine. He's all the things going on there, but I don't know. There's just something about Thrawn who'd be like, I analyzed what's happening. I turned 3 degrees to the right and saw that Vader had the path forward.
No, I totally am with you. I think Thrawn is one of the best shots for Vader to get somebody on his side, because at the end of the day, Thrawn has situational loyalty to the Emperor, but his main reason for being there is to assess the Imperial threat to the Chiss, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So he doesn't have any loyalty ultimately. Just cold strategy. And I think he understands Vader. I think he understands the emotional weaknesses of Vader. Mm-hmm. But I think he might feel, I'm not giving my allegiance to Vader. Vader is a tool. He is a piece on the chessboard, and I understand him well enough to manipulate him. And he can think I joined his rebellion, but really I, Thrawn, will be moving the chess piece Vader in a way that I think he'll actually succeed against the Emperor, and it will address this threat to the Chiss, and it will be better for me.
Exactly right. I mean, you've got to look at Palpatine and think, yeah, I got to side with him to help the Chiss, but if we misstep, he's got you know, floating death balls to take to our ascendancy. That's not safe for me. If I can have someone else who I can help install into a position of power and they maybe owe me and I can help guide them around and keep my people safe, I absolutely see Thrawn looking at some of the stuff that way.
Yeah, yeah. Who else you got?
Going right to old Will of Tarkin there. Without a doubt, he sides with Sheev. Why would – just look at their relationship. Even going back to the Citadel arc in Clone Wars, and again, Tarkin's connected some dots enough in my mind to at least kind of figure out what's going on. So I just think Tarkin's too straight-laced, right? You're talking about this Hollywood analogy. He's – no. We need three acts. Page 12, there's an inciting incident. That's what we got. We're sticking with that. Tarkin goes to Sheev.
Yeah, I think Tarkin goes to Sheev as well. I think partially because there's that power imbalance that Tarkin's one of, you know, the rank and file Imperials who can order Vader around. Vader is under Tarkin in the Imperial structure. And, you know, I think it's there in all of his appearances in live action and in animation, but also really in the book that Tarkin, the book Tarkin comes from a survival of the fittest culture mentality, right?
Yep.
And I think his assessment is that the Emperor is the fittest. So why would I side with this useful but wounded animal that is Vader?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great one of those books that came out so long ago, Lucina's Tarkin. It's so valuable to the alert in the evil that's inside Tarkin and how it got there. So I agree with that assessment.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is so fascinating. If you go down the list to see if we find anything that we disagree about, any more picks?
I'm going to Admiral Yularen, and he has the ISB in his hands, right? And again, I'm not saying Yularen has completely connected the dots of that Jedi that used to drive me crazy to this space wizard in the black suit now. He doesn't need to connect the dots to just be like, I've never really trusted people with lightsabers. So the ISB, I'm taking him to the Emperor. The Emperor gets the whole team. Maybe there's some Lonnies in there that might, you know, go around Yularen's back, but Partagaz, Miro, Blevin, they're all, Kallus, they're all going to the Emperor whether they want to or not. He's going to take him there.
Yeah, no, I love that connection. And in all the storytelling that we've had, fleshing out Order 66 and Vader's sort of role in the Empire of like, where'd this guy come from with the lightsaber and the Force? I guess. They were all traitors, but this one's on our side now. The blade is red. Okay, whatever. But I think there does have to be some of that resentment of like, I thought we got. I mean, it's there in that first, you know, A New Hope scene, right? With Mahdi being so dismissive of like, I thought we got rid of all of this, you know, mumbo jumbo BS. Wave your hand around, make the magic happen, guy. I don't want to see your magic hand. Get out of here. And I think like, Yularen being like, oh, finally. We could be done with all these erratic laser sword people.
Yeah, right? No, we're not going there.
I think this is maybe a controversial place where we could disagree. I love in Andor with Partagas that Partagas does seem a little bit aware of how dangerous and awful the game of the Empire is, right? There's that moment when he legitimately compliments Dedra Miro.
Yeah.
And then says, but watch your back. Because any amount of success, like, you know, the tallest poppy is being chopped down.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Success put the target on your back. So there's that slight part of me where Partagas might hear Vader's, you know, idea and be like, thesis, please. Insurrection, thesis, please. Insurrection, maybe, whispers Partagas. I think he'd consider it.
What a spirited session. I like that. I like the, then this would fracture into like an ISB civil war, right? Now everyone's fighting.
Everybody's spying on everybody. Yeah, I mean, ISB does seem like it's a constant, quiet job place civil war, but yeah. In general. Who else is left on your list?
Well, I felt I left Vader short here, that he would, you know, Thrawn is like you and I discussed, it sides with Vader, but not necessarily with gusto. So I'm trying to, who would Vader have in his back pocket? And I went to like some of those Sith cultists. Now, of course, Palpatine's got them too. I get that. And the dignitaries and Janice Grigiadis, all those people. But, you know, I'm talking like the early versions of the Acolyte of From Beyond or Acolyte of Beyond. Some kind of version of that. Maybe it's a group we haven't heard about, you know, where it's like, you know, they're worshiping, like we'll call this group the Twos. They worship the apprentice of the Sith because they know that that's the next power. So maybe they just kind of feel this is the natural cycle, and then naturally, yeah, an Imperial Civil War. Vader is the one we're going to back because it's just the way it works in the Sith. He'll take over, so they side with him because of that.
Yeah, no, I like that. A Sith cultist who specialize in apprentices is a great idea.
We worship the number Twos.
This is the cult of the second born. We shall be the ones who rise up. Yeah, love that. Love that idea. I think my final two thoughts is I felt the same way. I was like, who can I get on Vader's side? I think he could terrify some individual, like Navy captain commanders too. Like he's right here, right now. He's going to wipe us out unless we, you know, I think he could terrify some of them into staying, not loyal, but trying to preserve their lives. He does still have some version of the 501st into the Imperial, you know, the stormtroopers in. But I think some of them who've, you know, been on battlefields with Vader have some, you know, twisted loyalty. He's got a handful of the 501st. A fist with maybe some fewer fingers. Vader's fewer fingered fist.
Vader's thumb.
Vader's thumb. Still, you know, it's impressive, you know, but still not as scary. The one we haven't talked about, and it breaks my heart. The Inquisitors are all over turning on Vader, I think.
Yeah.
The Emperor is the ultimate power, and it is the Emperor's at least partial design how horrific the Inquisitor program is. But Vader's the one who's personally tortured them. Vader's the one who says, fail me and you're dead. Vader's the one who, like, seems like, you know, you didn't learn your Tuesday lesson, so I'm taking another limb. They would absolutely want to turn on Vader, I think.
Yeah. 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 Sad to say. I mean, look, there's no real winners in the Imperial Civil War, but Vader a little bit.
Maybe if they repeated the Sith cycle of the past and actually managed to destroy themselves, that would be pretty amazing. Maybe the rebellion's just forming and they've killed each other. Oh, okay, great.
This is like occasionally I've had a win in Fortnite where I'm just going around doing something and the storm takes my opponent and I win, but I'm standing there. That'd be the rebellion during this phase.
Exactly. That was a fun conversation. You have any more thoughts?
No, now I do want this comic series.
Yeah, this would be a great what if. Awful, awful what if. Thank you for the great thought starter, Michael. And we're going to move on to a question from Victor. Victor says, redemption. Star Wars, among other things, is about redemption. Why Darth Vader, Anakin, and many other killers deserve redemption. Where do you draw the line? Thanks. This is, I think, a really important question in Star Wars. It's something that we've talked about in the past, but we've had a couple more sort of dark siders making different choices stories since then. So I want to frame our conversation with the Google Dictionary definition of redemption, the action of saving or being saved from sin, error, or evil. So I think sometimes, you know, redemption is certainly a word Lucas has used in interviews to talk about Anakin Vader's journey. So I think maybe that's why it has stuck with fans as sort of the word. And I think some people have really done a deep dive or have connections with that word or that idea from their own life or from their own faith. And I think sometimes that description of Vader's path is, using that word redemption is used with a full and robust knowledge and investment in what redemption means. I think it also sometimes just gets thrown around and it's up to us to really go, what does that word mean to me? What do I think it means? And do I think it's the right word to use for what's happening in Star Wars? So as always, we want to have, you know, the utmost respect for different people's approach to Star Wars, especially when it can kind of dance into some real world stuff as well. So with that said, Ken, where do you go with your relationship with redemption in Star Wars and who deserves it and how you draw the line?
Well, first of all, I really appreciate what you're talking about there and going to the definition and just being, you know, what it means to you as an individual is important to the story. And it has become this, like, you know, eye roll. I've had conversations with people like, oh, another redemption. So where I started was I kind of felt I was cheating because I was really dividing this question up into real life and into Star Wars. And I think in real life, it's tough. It's no, I don't hear to one particular view on it, but I'll forgive, not forget philosophy is something that kind of can work for me. I am all for the idea of personal redemptions. It's to me, it's about choices, right? Those choices need to be followed by a series of actions that prove the choice, you know? Even on like, say, social media, sometimes there's someone with some like a political background that now has some political opinions that have changed. Let me just say that. Okay. And I'll be careful if to follow them because I'm like, well, cool. One good tweet about an issue does not make a change. Right. Mm-hmm. And before I endorse you, I want to see exactly what you're all about. And I think Star Wars has so much going on that it's, I have to look at it different than real life because Star Wars is going to tell, these big tales to tell these small, intimate stories with valuable lessons, right? That's kind of why we're here time and time again, along with the PPP. So even, follow me here, Joseph. Even Palpatine could make a decision that would have me accept the redemption in Star Wars simply because none of this is real.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to play the game. But I want to try to answer Victor's question. It's totally a deep real life question. So again, I go to even let's say Sheev changes. Great, great. Because it seemed like he changed a little bit in front of Mace. He was, please. That didn't work out well. So I would start there. They're in Star Wars. There's almost no line because I want to see where the story will take the issue and take the big question of the line itself. What is the line? I have some thoughts on that in a second, but I want to hand it over to you here before it sounds like I'm a Palpatine apologist.
Yeah, I think for me, this is, I agree with you. I think this is one of the times where it's really valuable to look at Star Wars, particularly the films, as a grand mythic story.
Yeah.
And Star Wars, started out mostly on the big screen, is a grand mythic story. And as we've got more and more storytelling, particularly in the publishing side, but now with the Andor side, we're spending a lot more time just with down to Earth, down to various planets, real people, real choices that make things a little bit more analogous to the real world than a sort of mythic symbolic moment, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So when I think about the idea of redemption in Star Wars and that word, I think it's a mythic, borderline religious in the context of Star Wars because it relates to Force. It's a mythic religious way to say they stopped making awful choices and didn't let the fact that they had invested in awful choices for a very long time stop them from realizing they could step away from hate and they could make a better choice. And that a couple of the main moments of redemption are these choices are made not just for the soul of the character, but they are made through a moment of sacrifice. Yeah. After years of horrific, awful choices, they make a better choice. And in that choice, there is a selflessness, there is sacrifice. And specifically in the case of Vader or Anakin, I would say, and Ben Solo, they literally saved others. They literally saved themselves in becoming one with the Force, right?
Yeah.
We see that Darksiders, you know, either they go into the Force. They are not sentient. They returned from whence all beings in Star Wars came, part of the Force, or in a worst case, their angry, hateful souls get trapped haunting a mask or a boot.
Yeah,
whatever. And they're just locked in this horrific cycle of violence and pain and rage and agony for eternity. You know, we've seen that story with some Darksiders. But in these final moments, they make a better choice. It is a choice of selflessness. It is a choice of sacrifice, and they return to ostensibly their true selves, reconnect with the light side, and they are now, you know, sentient within the Force. And I think it's all mythic. I think you can look at it as just Star Wars. I think when you look at the history of the real world redemption and its ties to various real world religions, the fact that Anakin and Ben Solo stories are about a selfless choice that led to a new adventure in a different realm. I think that's meaningful. And I think that's all the mythic side of it.
Yeah. Yeah. The big side. Yeah. Why we're here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I think the thing that I think a lot of fans are thinking about and asking about now, which I think is great, is a little bit more of the real world, right? Like,
yeah,
if Anakin or Ben lived and the people who see the potential they always had and see that they made a better choice, if Luke brings Anakin back to Endor, if Rey brings Ben back, everybody's partying and should Rey make it, Rey pops out of the X-Wing and like, and Ben's here too.
Right.
What's the real world?
Yeah.
You know, not the mythic, the real world. And I don't think we've had a chance to see a super full version of that story of how does somebody like Anakin or Ben, how do they make a difference? Can they ever be forgiven by somebody like a Poe or a Leia, you know?
Yeah.
And I think we've seen characters walk away from the dark side. We've seen Asajj walk away from the dark side. Mm-hmm. But she didn't have a terribly long life. We've got that potential with Reva, which I'm really excited about. I think Star Wars could really use the balance of seeing, like, let's look at that walking away from the dark side story of how it would play out if you needed to live your whole life. There's some people who are never going to forgive you. Are you going to be able to forgive yourself? How are you going to make up for it? You know, at what point are you going to say, I've atoned as much as I possibly can, and now I just need to exist. I can't be forever defined by hating myself for my bad choices. I need to find some love for myself. All these complex questions of what is a life led after you've said, I've done atrocious things, but I'm going to continue to live. Mm.
I love this side of the conversation because I think you're very, very right. We just sometimes want more real things in our media versus the big and mythic. And that's not just in Star Wars. That's those shades of gray that people love so much. Right. And I remember going into nine, remember the conversation was about Kylo and would he be redeemed? And I was one of the ones that would just one of my favorite Star Wars. What ifs, like what if they had played around the idea of he remains alive and going forward, whether you see it in the movie or not, or just in Star Wars storytelling, that big question of how does Ben Solo walk around the New Republic offices with people knowing who he was and what he did. And that there's some value in that. And I wonder, Joseph, if that comes out of a lifetime of being a fan of this mythic side of Star Wars. And now we ask these questions. Remember, there was even that debate of like, well, Vader's done some horrible things and, you know, we're not going to accept his kind of redemption arc at the end of Jedi. There was even some of that stuff on Twitter. And that's where I go to well, it's not real. It's he didn't, you know, do all, it's a character. We're supposed to learn this big lesson. But for me, I'm interested to see that. And I think the Book of Boba Fett scratched that itch a little for me.
Yeah.
Different kind of character. Wasn't dark side, black cloak, red blade. But, you know, Boba Fett was like, I've done some things. I don't want to do these things anymore. And I got to keep proving myself time and time again. So that it's not just I didn't just change my armor or my Twitter handle. I am who I am now, and I want to make better. It's a little smaller scale bounty hunter versus Sith Lord, the classic Star Wars villains. But I think it starts to get into the real side of it for me.
But it is true. It's like Boba Fett. I kind of tried to walk with my version of honor, but at the end of the day, I killed people for money, no questions asked.
Yeah.
Now. And where did that lead me? Who was there for me when I fell, you know?
Yeah.
And now I want to be somebody different. Yeah. I get lots of critiques or complaints and surprises about Book of Boba Fett, but I think that's, you know, one of the reasons that series means a lot to you and I, because it is asking that question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point, because we've seen lots of characters not be evil space wizards with cool blades and armor, but even somebody like a Kallus in Rebels, who he's got the line to Zeb of like about his slaughter of the Lasat people that he was personally responsible for and bragged about at one point.
Yeah,
it was like I it wasn't supposed to be a massacre, and I was just following orders. Right, that's somebody who could dig down for the rest of his life and go, yeah, it's not my fault. It's not my responsibility. The Lasat were told to back down, and they didn't. What was I supposed to do? And he could cling to that forever. And instead, he made this change and then made a commitment to making a difference. Right.
Yeah.
And I think, again, we didn't spend in a ton of time with that story, but that's the beginning of that kind of what is the story when it isn't a last moment of life better choice where you sacrifice and you make a difference, but you just go, I have been on the wrong path. I'm doing a U-turn and I'm going to make the best of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Kallus is a great example. There's, different versions of it. I even look at Bodhi Rook, right? The whole make things right. He wasn't an evil man at all. He just had a job in the Empire, but making it right, that journey forward. And I'm fascinated by the discussion. I wonder too, again, Joseph, in this real world, not just even the last couple of years, but hey, life is hard. And because of social media, we see a lot of this out there that I wonder if this cry for what you're talking about, the more real side of it. And hey, so what if Ben Solo stays alive? What now? What does Poe say to him? Just comes out of our own desire to find out how to handle that in our real life. The question of what's the line is maybe easy in some big scale things, but also in your personal life, where those lines are. And I just wonder, especially as we've all grown up with Star Wars, we're like, Star Wars, please tell us what do we do?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, part of the idea of Star Wars is to we want people to change and evolve, right? Like, anybody, if Ben Solo lived and Poe could never forgive him, fine.
Right.
Totally fine. But that idea of there's like a difference between Poe saying, I can never forgive him, right?
Yeah.
Versus Poe saying he shouldn't be given a chance to change. He should be wiped out of existence,
Yep.
And if Poe's like, I'm never breaking bread with Mr. Wavy Hair, I made some mistakes. Not happening for me. But gave Ben the grace to be like, but he did change and he's out there making a difference now and he's helping people. I've got to give him the space to do that. And it's better that he does that than hurt people,
Yep. Exactly. What's Han Solo going to think when he hears the Boba Fett's running a nice family dining establishment on Tatooine?
Pshaw. Yeah. I think, for me, one of the other things that's always important about this is I don't, even with the sort of the more mythic, almost symbolic, journeys of Anakin and Ben making a better choice at the end of their life. To me, it's not about a cosmic scale. To me, it isn't about, and so it all worked out, all's forgiven, To me, it's not necessarily about forgiveness. It's just about that idea that if you've been gripped by rage and you've made mistakes, it is never too late to make a better choice, It's the beauty of Luke's story and Rey's story that there's like, we see this part of you that doesn't want to be doing this. Are you sure you want to be doing this? And that it's a beautiful thing that in that moment they were like, no, I don't want to be doing this. I'm going to have the strength to say no to this, finally. But to me, it isn't a cosmic scale. It isn't like, and all problems wiped away. Everybody forgives you. No problem. You made a whoops. Like, I don't think that's to me what it's meant. By redemption story. That's my personal feeling on it. Not trying to define it for anybody else. That's my personal.
I don't want to define it either for anyone else, but I think sometimes, that's the interpretation, but I'm with you on that one there.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on this, big, complicated topic?
It is complicated and we're always open to everyone's interpretations. Like you just said, Joseph, but, it's fascinating. And Reva is a character that I don't even need in Kenobi 2. I need Reva 1. I do want to see that. And that's, I think it's fascinating. And you can do it in a mythic way as well as a real.
Yeah. Cause I think Reva is such a great example of somebody who has been caught in a cycle of violence and mm-hmm. broke free of it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's almost like she's starting her life brand new from when she was a child at the Jedi Temple of like, I've broken out of the cycle. Now what? And again, it's not auto forgiveness, no problem, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's a chance to build a new and different and better life.
Indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. Great question and topic. I'm sure we will continue to revisit it. And again, just because we can't say it enough, when it touches on extremely important real life subjects, we really respect that people have a wide variety of experiences and perspectives, and we are sharing ours. With that, we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to answer more cues of the Force.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? United Healthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
And And we are back with two more Cues of the Force. We've got questions from our patrons on Patreon. We go first to Justin Jacobson. Justin says, I have seen humorous Father's Day cards that feature Darth Vader and can't help but wonder which Star Wars mothers would work well for a Mother's Day equivalent. What do you think? Shmi Skywalker? Leia Organa? Edie Karn? I would love to hear your take on this. We would love to share our take, Justin. This is, I didn't really mean it this way, but this is kind of a great follow-up from the Vader redemption, right? Of like, Vader's done awful things, and man, society just can't get enough of the ironic, funny Father's Day cards from this mass murderer.
Yeah, they're funny and amusing, but yeah, that's not lost on me.
Yeah. So what do you think? What are the bizarre Star Wars Mother's Day cards or heartfelt ones that you'd like to see?
It's a mix of both for me. And I think Justin suggested some of the ones that we would have put down as well. I'll start here. I'm not a huge fan of cards. Like, don't ever give me a card, and I won't get you a card. I just don't think they're sincere.
Give the gift of not giving.
Yeah. It's been a longstanding issue of mine, so I don't play with cards too much here. But a Leia one with you have everything you need, right? That's like the one thing that she offers so much to Star Wars Galaxy. But I was like, what's one kind of lasting legacy piece of card advice that I think she has? And you have everything you need is one for me. So I think I'll start there.
That you have everything you need. That could be a funny, ironic one. It could be like a beautiful picture of Leia on the outside. The front of the card could say, you have everything you need. And you could open it. It's like, so I'm not getting you a damn thing for your birthday.
That's more the Carrie Fisher version, right? For my Shmi one, I was like, don't look back, you know, accepting change. Those could be that. That's a nice comforting Mother's Day card. I'd like to get that. Just a Shmi staring at you saying, you know, don't look back. Don't look back. I can use that. But for Edie Karn, you get that one. There's so many. And then you open it up and it just says, I intuit you have no future prospects.
Yeah. Edie Karn is like, to me, the winner for the cruel, ironic ones, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What did you do to your hair? Just a car from your mom, Edie Karn.
You open it, it's a sound card, so it's the sound of Cyril slurping some cereal.
Yeah, Edie, beautiful picture of Edie Karn on that side, and you open it up and like, even Uncle Harlow can't help you.
Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.
I realize these are Mother's Day cards.
Yeah, you're right.
So there you go. That's where I went. For Mom Mothma, there's so many things. There's a lot of rebellion quotes, but I was like, you know, she also just could be like, you know, well, that's hurtful. It's just her and Lita and their exchanges.
Yeah. I mean, I think this question makes me think of so many things. Cause there's the ironic weird ones, like the absolute celebration of Darth Vader. There's some card with Darth Vader giving you pizza for Father's Day. Like there's some weird stuff out there I've seen over the years. I think about the weird ironic ones, and Edie Karn is very, very funny to me. You could give a Mother's Day card that is like, you know, Happy Mother's Day. You are a better mother than Edie Karn.
yeah, that's the way to do it.
A picture of them at the breakfast table and Cyril with his head in his hands. Like, you never made me feel as bad as Cyril. Thanks, Mom. Have a great day.
Yeah.
But Shmi, man, Shmi is the matron of the Skywalker line, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know about ironic, but like, you know, thanks for teaching me. The biggest problem in the galaxy is no one helps one another. So help yourself to this gift card, Mom.
Right.
From Shmi, you know, you can't stop the suns from setting, but if anyone could, you could, Mom. Like, yeah, lots of great Shmi cards could happen. Yeah. I think another mother figure that an actual mother that I would like to celebrate in Star Wars because I'm on my Rebels kick is Hera, right?
Oh yeah, that's a great one. Yeah,
get Melruns in breakfast in bed from your kids, you know. Yeah. And
yes.
Here's a picture of the Calicori edition. Like Hera's Hera's a great character, and I don't want to define her as only a mother to the Rebels. That Rebel cell, but a lot of her story is about family and tradition, and the, you know, the little family of that group, you know, seeing her as the mom figure and trying to make things nice for her every once in a while.
Yeah. That'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah. I love Mon Mothma. I love Padme. Those mothers should be celebrated. They should be on cards, but also Leia, you know, because Leia is, you know, literal parent of Ben, but she's also in the sequel. She is such the parent of everybody, right? Of Rey and Poe and Finn. So I think there'd be some like great cards that you could give to maybe not your actual mom, but your a maternal presence in your life. Could be some great Leia Skywalker Organa cards.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's so many. Yeah, we always talk about we want more mothers in Star Wars, but yeah, there's a lot to honor.
Yeah. Do you think that Han ever got Leia Mother's Day gifts?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. The struggle is he would get a card because I don't think he, you know, he's not the best at maybe putting his thoughts down into words. So I think he would need a card. But I think he's guilty of giving a lot of gifts that might be for him. But, you know, it's not like simple, you know, dad bought mom a saw again, that type of, no, it's just like, you know, and it could be misconstrued. Like, I think his intentions, even the thing, and there was some real world debate around it. But even remember when the idea of like the Falcon now has a kitchen, because Han put that in for Leia, it wasn't to suggest that Leia was to get into the kitchen and cook. It was like, I'm trying to make this more home for you so you can feel like you belong here on the Falcon with me. I'm giving you that. But that Leia could be like, but you just want meals here, right? Is that is this for you or me?
Is that a great exchange, right? Yeah. In Princess, not Princess Aldrin, in the Han and Leia wedding book about that.
Yeah, right. So I think Han does that a lot. He steps in it a bit. And so a lot of gifts are that.
Yeah. No, I love that. Yeah. I love that exchange in Princess and Scoundrels. Like, I can't cook. You don't want to eat my food.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Along that line, I think it'd be great if like someday he was like, hey, for Space Mom's Day, I fixed the Dejeric table.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, Han's like, I thought we could play together. And Leia's like, come on.
That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Any more mom thoughts, Mother's Day cards in Star Wars before we move on?
No, I better get mine now before I forget in May. So bad at it.
I understand. I've been doing some cleaning and reorganizing this year, and I have a very large pile of cards, and I appreciate them all. But now I need to find where they live.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We're going to move on to our final question from our patron, Robert Meadows on Patreon. Robert says, greetings all. I was recently rewatching Rebels season 3, episode 4, The Antilles Extraction, and I noticed something. When Sabine asks Wedge if he could fly a specific ship, he replies with, I can fly anything. An obvious callback to the line made famous by Poe Dameron in The Force Awakens. My question to you is, do you think Poe heard Wedge say this at one point and liked it so much he decided to start saying it himself? In my headcanon, Wedge said the line to anyone and everyone.
Yes.
When he sees the Death Star for the first time in A New Hope and says, look at the size of that thing, I bet in his head he was thinking, I bet I can fly that. What say you? Do you have any fun headcanon thoughts? I love that Wedge headcanon. Like, where's the controls on that Death Star? I could make that spin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is great. First thing I'll say, I'll say this. I'm not here to debate Robert's question. I think it's a great question. I don't think it's a clear callback to me or an obvious one, because good chance the Rebels, that even though I know it's a season or two in, season three, the development thing, it could have already been down on paper somewhere before Poe even said it on screen for us. That's the only thing I refute on that. But all that to say, I think this is a trait that all hotshot pilots have. It's something in their hearts. They all think they can fly. So they're going to say it. And as they should.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think that there is the absolute possibility that it was just a happy accident that they both said those things, because the development, it's a long development on animation, and yeah, it looks, Antilles Extraction came out on October 8th, 2016, so almost a year after The Force Awakens, so certainly from our perspective, that we experienced it as a callback, but it might not have been created as a callback, I think, is a really good point.
Yeah.
Which adds to the fun headcanon of like, yeah, no, they all say that.
They all say it, right? Luke was absolutely ready to yell, "I'm not such a bad pilot myself," to Han, who of course felt he was the best flyer in the galaxy, and Hera would disagree. And Snap Wexley absolutely probably picked this up from Wedge. I'm sure he said it. Even Cassian, in all serious Andor, Cassian was challenged several times about what he could or could not fly. And I think even similar but different. Rey was not as boastful because she knew in her heart she was a pilot and was probably tired of having to explain that to everyone in the galaxy. So when by the time we meet her, she's like, "Yes, I can fly it." I think it's a different angle on it. But any pilot in galaxy, which is funny because Star Wars is so much about spaceships flying, the pilots are like, "No, no, no, I got this. I know you don't believe me, but I can do that."
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I love that we have so many great stories of people who pilot is one of their main nouns. It's a part of who they are, right? And then we learn characters like, yeah, no, I'm nowhere near as good as Hera or Han or Wedge, but yeah, I can fly. So it's almost funny to me when we meet a character who just straight up can't pilot a ship. I'm like, what are you, a child? You don't have your driver's license in Star Wars? What?
Right.
Like, I mean, that's the whole thing with skiing, right? Like, That's why he's buddying up to Andor, and Andor sees very accurately, yeah, you're using me for my ability to fly anything, and then you're going to stab me in the back.
That's funny, too, because that's Finn and Poe's relationship, so love that.
Yep. You need a pilot. I need a pilot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But to Robert's question, I'm down with the headcanon that even if all pilots live it in their heart, maybe Wedge is the one who made it a turn of phrase that is the way in the New Republic era you say that you are a great pilot. I can fly anything. And I also kind of love it that maybe it's a Wedgeism that he picked up somewhere. It's a way, it's not an original thought, but it's like a way to make a thought a bumper sticker, right? And make sure that everybody holds it in their heart. I kind of like it from that perspective, that Wedge, having, you know, lived through the rebellion and all the fight dragging on after Endor and all that horror, being like, you never know what's going to come up. Hey, it's great if you know just a B-wing better than anyone, but the real way to be a great pilot is to understand flight mechanics so well you aren't phased by an interface. This isn't just a brag. This is a mantra, and it needs to be true. The best pilot can fly anything. You're the pilot, not the ship. I can fly anything is what I want to hear from every person I train, and I want it to be true.
Gotta believe it. This is my week of Tom Cruise. I just saw him. He was like going over stunts. He's like, "We're not careful. We're confident. We're not careful. We're confident." And that's I can fly anything.
I think I've mentioned this before. There was when I was at Kinko's, I had mentioned in an offhanded way to my manager, there was somebody who was working at Kinko's who always had a reason that they couldn't get things done. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of mumbled all with him, "It can't be done." And my manager was like, "Star Wars. Yeah, you like Star Wars?" Like, yeah. It was like a year and a half before Phantom Menace came out. And he's like, we need to adopt Star Wars is the way we talk about Kinko's. So he obsessed on his definition of a Jedi was people who could run every machine at Kinko's, and they didn't have one they were afraid of or didn't know how to clear the jam. You know, it was really a I can make copies on anything attitude. And I remember it was like a year and a half later, he came up to me and was like, "We've got everyone trained. Everyone on first shift is a Jedi."
See, Star Wars is truly everywhere.
It finds you everywhere. Any final thoughts on the turn of phrase, "I can fly anything"?
No, I do want to hear the stories. I want to see how Wedge, I want to see those training classes. I want to know how Snap, you know, would sit and talk about it before he passed on. But yeah. I want to trace this through Star Wars.
Yeah. That would be absolutely great to see Wedge being, "Oh, yeah, really? Can you fly this?" All right. We are going to move on then from our questions to an entry on our topic, Power of the Light Side. This is something we send out a request for submissions on Patreon. If you're one of our patrons, there's a post up. Just look under the post. There's a call for submissions. I think this is the last submission we have. So if you want to share one, please, by all means, share your positive memory of any element of Star Wars, what it means to you, and we'll happily share it on the show. And if we don't have any for a little while, we'll refresh the request. But for now, we have this Power of the Light Side submission from Brian Embry. Brian says, "My Power of the Light Side comes from my love of the now Legends novels. I was born a couple months before New Hope, February 1977, and Star Wars has always been a part of my life. As you know, there was a void of Star Wars content for many years after Return of the Jedi, but then the Thrawn series was released and I fell right back into it and was completely immersed in the Star Wars universe again. Years later, when I was dating my now wife, she couldn't fully understand why I loved it so much, and then I introduced her to the Thrawn trilogy and she was hooked. We bonded over every Star Wars novel that came out and even planned to name our daughter Mara Jade, but later had to change it for non-Star Wars reasons. Anyway, both my wife and I were very upset when it was announced that they were wiping the slate clean and making all of the novels non-canon legends. It felt as though they took away decades of my life in something that I cherished greatly. I continued to be a Star Wars fan and raised my kids right, and now they are huge fans, but I always felt like something was missing and probably a little betrayed. But then I started listening to Force Center, having followed Ken over from his previous life, and the two of you helped me accept that my Star Wars is what I want it to be, and I can love both. I cannot thank you enough for spreading your positive messaging, and I listen to you on my drive to and from work. Your podcasts take me to my place of joy, heading to work, and then back to my family at night to give them the recap. Thank you so much, and keep doing what you're doing. May the Force be with you." May the Force be with you, Brian. Thank you so much for the kind words and for being a part of our community. Ken, what's your thoughts on this Power of the Light Side entry?
Yeah, look, I love the sentiment here and really appreciate it, Brian. And it's a reminder of the lessons that, you, me, and Jennifer not just say, but have to constantly remind ourselves of, Joseph, right? Mm-hmm. I am on the record. Everything Brian's talking about, I did not experience. I'm not a Legends fan. I'm not an EU fan. There's some things along the way. There's some things that show up I like. And I have had to remind myself that the stuff I come on this podcast and say applies to me as well. I can't take that joy away from Brian. That's my interactions with the EU. That's not his. His Star Wars exists, and clearly he loves some of the stuff that's also out there now, and that's my Star Wars. This is how I interact with it. And I think that's one of the things we've always been about, but I think, I don't know, it's merged even more recently where I get pretty defensive about Star Wars, because I don't want anyone to take it away from a 7-year-old who loves Forces of Destiny more than anything. I don't want to take it from a 15-year-old that grew up with Force Awakens. I don't want to take it from a 45-year-old who's like, you know what? Mara Jade was my favorite. That's not what we're here for. We're here to celebrate all of it. And though we focus on canon, modern canon, that just makes a lot of sense. Number one, you and I just didn't engage with EU maybe as much as someone like Brian, but it's a great reminder for ourselves. We are constantly learning the lessons here of Star Wars. It's not just us saying these great things on high in this community around. You all out there listening form the community, and it's a mirror back on us. So I love being reminded of it, Brian, and love your relationship with Star Wars through the decades.
Yeah, I so agree. This was such a great ride reading this and going, oh, this is in Power of the Light Side. There's some honesty about some tension with the relationship with Star Wars. Where is this headed? And, you know, I read this on a day where I was very busy and very stressed, and it was really, this message was really a balm. It was really helpful to me. So I really thank Brian for that. I never got deep into Legends, but I really understand where Brian is coming from. I think I've had it maybe in other fandoms. Like, I grew up reading the Teen Titans comic book in the 80s, and it's like the comic book for me, and I loved it. And then, you know, there are various animated adaptations of the Teen Titans, and I was like, I'm excited they're on TV, but that's not mine, you know? And then, like, getting to that point of acceptance of like, but yours isn't gone. You can go read those comic books anytime you want. And then maybe you could just say this is a different version and both versions exist. And that's fine. And, you know, I didn't read the Legends novels, but, you know, that's almost like if I had read the right book at the right time, I would have read them with the vigor and consistency that so many people did. If I got hooked at the with the right book at the right time, I can imagine myself being utterly immersed in this long story of Han and Luke and Leia start here, but then they have kids and we get to know those kids, and then those kids grow up, and then there's a tragedy with their kids, and then like the length of that journey with those characters, I really do understand that, and I really do respect that. And I think if those stories meant a lot to you, like Brian is saying, cherish them, celebrate them. They're not gone, you know?
Yeah.
And it really is just two versions of the story. And I think approaching it that way is so great, so wonderful.
Did you ever feel, you being a fan of more traditional superhero comics, Marvel, DC and whatnot, which I did not explore as much as a kid. But when they reboot things or the new 52 10 years or so ago, did you have that kind of similar experience? Because you had maybe put some more time, some more elbow grease into those stories as a fan?
Yeah, absolutely. I started reading in the era of reboots, so I kind of got to jump in new of here's the new take on Superman and, you know, all that kind of thing. But there was an extreme shift in style, in aesthetic. You know, artists like Jim Lee and McFarlane, like this super busy style kind of took over everything, and there were more crossovers. And there really was, like, I was quite young, but I was, a grumpy old man at 22 was like, these aren't my comic books anymore. That's not a great artist. I'll show you a great artist. Like, I definitely did have that. It's not exactly the same of it, the continuity being wiped out, but there was a change. There was a massive shift in style and perspective and release, you know, and how you followed them. And that's part of the reason I got off the train on collecting monthly comic books. When I was like 16, I was like, how is this ever going to end? I'm never going to stop collecting comic books. They're going to collapse on me, and that's going to be it. And then there was a big seismic shift in comic books, and I just got off.
That's interesting. Yeah, I sometimes want to find, you know, that common ground, and nothing's as powerful and passionate as Star Wars for me. But even, you know, I'm a big fan of G.I. Joe and the old toy comics, you would say, in the 80s. That continuity is still going. Larry Hama actually came back. They're into like well into the 200s, but I haven't really read those. But they rebooted G.I. Joe several times for several attempts. Some of them I thought were great, some of them not so much. And every time I just kind of had the feeling of like, well, this is like some weird alternate reality. I'm not as invested in it. But again, nothing's as powerful what Brian's explaining with Star Wars and Legends, EU, modern canon. So again, I'm just trying to find common ground there with Brian on that feeling.
Yeah. And I think just being able to exactly like Brian's saying, to value what meant a lot to you when it found you in the right time, that, you know, its value is not decreased by there being a different version or a new version out there is so great. I mean, it's kind of happens, you know, obviously with Star Wars, with the what is canon, what isn't, that's a real sharp version of it, but it's naturally going to happen in Star Wars. Star Wars used to be it only comes out every few years and it's a big screen, big event, and it's changed. And now it's on Disney Plus, you know? And, you know, just trying to not be put off by the change, but trying to find what you can enjoy in the change is a really good, I think, lesson Star Wars can help us with.
Indeed. Great stuff, Brian.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ken. That is it. Where can people find us?
Hey, you can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Hive Social at Force Center. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. As we've said, top of the show, if you want to subscribe on YouTube, we'd appreciate that a lot. We try to reach 7,000 subscribers. Podcast is available in a lot of different spots, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter and patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can support us directly. From there, you can get into our Discord. Follow me at CadNapsock or go to my website, CadNapsock.com for more. I'm bringing a new podcast out in 2023 called The Blathering. It's been on my Patreon page for a while, but it's going to be public, so you can get more information on that on my website as well. Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media. I'm really highlighting Instagram. If you want to try out Hive or Mastodon, I'm there as well. You can just search for Joseph Scrimshaw on all those social media apps and find me. I'm still on TikTok as well. And building my presence on YouTube, got some new stuff coming, and I'm posting my not unboxing videos celebrating Star Wars action figures and a few other kinds, but mostly Star Wars on YouTube and TikTok, so feel free to check that out. For now, for myself, for Ken, for our Edie Karn Mother's Day cards, this has been Cues of the Force.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.